discovery I made this week is that the word conspire means to breathe together. I don't know if you know that. If people are conspiring together, they are breathing together. That's what the word literally means. So inspire is obviously in breathe, expire, out breathe, conspire means breathe together. So I just wondered if we could all just breathe together for 3 seconds. So you're ready for this? I'm going to say 1, 2, 3, and then I'm going to ask us to breathe in, and then I'll ask us to hold our breath and then breathe out. So shall we try that? 1, 2, 3, breathe in. And breathe out. We have just conspired. We have launched a conspiracy together. What happens at Pentecost is that the people of God conspire. They breathe together. The word spirit means breath. It's an interesting thing to think about air. Air is this thin blue strip that goes round our planet. And it has pretty much been unchanged for the last few million years. That means that we're all kind of sharing the same air. And because particles of air are so infinitesimally small and dispersed so widely, it's quite something to think that every single one of us is currently breathing some stegosaurus breath. That many million years ago, there were dinosaurs which breathed some of the same air that we are breathing now. We're also breathing hamster breath. We are also breathing palm tree breath, because of course trees breathe as well. We are probably breathing, if the wind has been sufficiently at it and mixing things up properly, we're probably breathing some of the same particles of air that we first breathed as a child, which is quite a thought as well. We are conspiring with our childhood selves. This might be good or bad news. We are probably breathing some of Margaret Thatcher's breath right now, and we're probably breathing some of Martin Luther King's breath, and probably some of Mother Teresa's. And it's quite something to say that we are breathing, we are conspiring in some sense with all these people and all these creatures. Barbara Brown Taylor talks about this American preacher. She says that what happened at Easter was that on the cross, Jesus breathed his last out into the world. And she says that unlike what happened with ordinary breath, is that God took this breath, or the Greek word for breath is pneuma, or spirit, or in Hebrew, ruach. God took that breath and somehow held the breath of Jesus, the spirit of Jesus, for 40 days, or for 40 days plus a week, right? And then poured it out. And the breath of Jesus was poured on people who didn't expect it. And in breathing Jesus' breath, they became like Jesus. The Egyptians and the Parthians and the Italians and the Medes, they breathed the breath of Jesus. The disciples breathed the breath of Jesus. Did you hear the passage from Joel? On all flesh, I will pour my spirit, I will pour my breath. All flesh will conspire with the breath of Jesus. Slave girls breathed, and they breathed revolution. And old men breathed, and they dreamt dreams. And young men breathed, and they saw visions, and they conspired with Jesus Christ, who himself had seen liberation, and who himself had seen dreams and visions. And the breath of Jesus was poured out on all flesh, the most unlikely of breath. There's an interesting thing that Peter, later on in his sermon, says, turn and be saved from this crooked generation. And I don't really like those words. I think, oh Peter, that's awful condemnatory. But what's interesting is that Peter is speaking to an audience of the devout. He is speaking to a group of people who have come to Jerusalem, pilgrims, for the feast, the Jewish feast of Pentecost. And he is saying to them, these devout Jews, you need to be saved from this crooked generation. And you think, well, Peter, I can understand why you might want to say that to the Roman soldiers. And I can understand why you might want to go to some of the pagan Greeks and tell them that they need to be saved from this crooked generation. But this group of Jews, like, go easy on them. Like, they're reading the law, and they're learning from the law how they have to live. But Peter says, even to them, go down the route of law and of rules. And it becomes a way of trying to appease a God who doesn't like you very much. But if you can just keep the Ten Commandments with suitable zeal, if you can just keep, in Jewish thought there were 613 commandments, if you can keep them and not put a foot wrong, then God might just say to you, you've passed the exam. But Peter says this way of being is crooked. Instead, the Spirit, the breath of Jesus, somehow moves us into a new communion with God, who is love and is mercy and is kindness. A God who, through the blood of Jesus Christ, forgives all our sin. And people have the great surprise of discovering that they belong to God. And I think that is what the conspiracy of the Spirit is. This is my first Sunday back with you since I was made free 2 weeks ago, when I finished at the General Assembly and I am no longer a convener, and therefore that's been a good dent to my pride. But it means that I'm free to become a parish minister. But it's quite interesting, I was at the General Assembly 2 weeks ago, and it was actually 3 weeks. And the General Assembly, the Church of Scotland, has been realising it needs to have radical change, that the presbyteries need to work more together, and we need different ways of sorting out our money, and we need to be able to train more people in the ways of the faith. So that's right. We need to be able to reach out to young people, because there are not nearly enough young people connecting with the Church of Scotland. And that's not just because young people are the church of tomorrow and we need them to come and fill the pews after we're gone, but it's because if the church is not connecting with all people in Scotland, it's not connecting with all flesh. It's ceasing to be the Church of Spirit. And this kind of movement for radical change had its kind of kick start through a book that an academic from Glasgow called Doug Gay wrote about a year and a half ago. It's called Reforming the Kirk. And Doug, who's kind of a pal of mine, Doug had met and he said, oh, we need to sort out 121 George Street, and we need to merge some of the councils, we need to change the way that money goes. And I kept saying, Doug, that's not going to do it. I mean, you can fix all these things if you want, and we probably do have to fix them, but there's actually deeper change that we need to get to the bottom of. But anyway, Doug wrote his book, and he's a very good communicator. He actually gave me an acknowledgement in the front of his book, which I was quite pleased with, because not many people acknowledge me in their books. But but I was also thinking, but Doug, I don't agree with half of what you've said. So that's fine. Anyway, people read Doug's book. Anyway, last year's General Assembly, there was a thing that I was involved in called a strategic plan, which Trotsky and Stalin would be proud of, where we had this grand vision and we were going to sort out the Kirk. And it got bombed out. People say, it's not ambitious enough, but people just get annoyed at specifics. So it got bombed out. And instead, people stood up, a guy called Robert Allen, and said, we need a radical plan, we need to be radical. And everybody says, well, what does radical mean? And Robert Allen goes, I don't know, we just need to be radical. So everybody goes around the General Assembly last year going, oh, we need to be radical, isn't that great, we need to be radical. And we need to listen to the ideas of Doug Gay. And Robert Allen had said this in his speech. And So the folks, they did really well, I wasn't involved in this. They went away and came up with what was called the Radical Action Plan. I came to this year's assembly. And on the Saturday, the General Assembly, I was excited and going, oh, isn't it great, we've got a Radical Action Plan. And I bumped into Doug. And I said, hey, Doug, how are you doing? I said, Doug, you're the man of the hour. And everybody's talking about your book, and your ideas have come to something. Well done. And I'm pleased for him, because he's been agitating for this for a long time. And he said to me, Neil, well, how do you feel about the new plans? And I said, well, they go so far, Doug, but they don't really get to the heart of the matter. And Doug kind of looks a bit kind of crestfallen at this point and says, well, I can tell you're a bit disappointed, Neil. You know, he was always wanting me to be a kind of more kind of, I don't know, enthusiastic disciple of his ideas. And I said to him, Doug, the problem with the Church of Scotland has got nothing to do with committees. And it's got nothing to do with the money in 121 George Street. The problem with the Church of Scotland is that it is boring, Doug. It is boring. And too many people turn up on a Sunday morning and they are bored to death. And I said, what is happening? I said, boredom is this, Doug. I said, there is no such thing as a boring man. Poor Doug is sitting there, I ran from me. I said, Doug, there is no such thing as a boring person. The only time that you will be with someone and you are bored is either that they are acting and they're putting on a front, or you are acting or putting on a front, or you haven't found a language that both of you can understand. Because if you have any encounter in which I am truthfully present, and you are truthfully present, and we find a language that we can both understand, that is always inspiring. And those of you, you know this. You know that, let me use as an example, one of the things I find hard, and I maybe shouldn't admit this, but I find it sometimes hard to be with people who have dementia, because you think, what am I going to say here to people? But those of you who have done this know that sometimes when you're with dementia, people with dementia, and somehow you manage to get the rush out of your mind, and you can just sit with that person, and you might find a way of talking to them which is about singing a song, or you might hold their hand, or my mum used to do aromatherapy with folks. If you find a place where I can truthfully be, and you can truthfully be, and we find a language that we understand, then something special happens in that place. You might even call it communion. And if you're with someone who has dementia and you get to that space, it's very precious. And I said to Doug, this is what's not happening in the Church of Scotland. Too often, our formalism is not a language that people understand. So, Doug and I kind of parted, and we went away, and we passed the Radical Action Plan, and everybody's very, very happy. But my point being is, I think that the Spirit tells us that in church we have to find a language that speaks to people, not just churchy folks, but all sorts of folk from all sorts of backgrounds, because I believe that God is true, and I believe that people are true, and I believe that the gospel is true, and if we can find ways of expressing that gospel, those two people will connect with God and see that this is for me. So I want to tell two stories about that, and also I suppose about the way that the Spirit rescues us from a crooked generation, and also about the way that the Spirit throws people outside of what people thought were the religious boundaries, which is what happened in Pentecost. And the second of those stories is going to be a slightly controversial story, and I don't expect all of you to agree with it. And I just want to say right now, you will not all agree with it. But I have to tell you the story because it's true. And it's true for me, and it's a story I've held with me for about a year and a half since I've been with you, and it's about time I told you it. So that'll be the story that I tell at the end. But firstly, a story that happened yesterday. Always been wary of preachers who tell me stories of a wedding that happened the Saturday before, because it means that they've been cutting short the preparation. I should have had this all sorted out through the week. But this happened yesterday. And I was assigned to a table. There was a guy in Aberfeldy called Sam Whitman who got married. And we were at a table up at past Kenmore. And we're at this reception, and often people put me next to people at weddings that they think it would be good for me to meet them, you know. And that's what happened. And I was with this couple, and she was the best friend of the groom's mum. Does that make sense? The best friend of the groom's mum. So they'd grown up together down in Essex, I think. And I was sat next to them, and you know that thing, you sit down and you say hello to the folk, and you think, oh my goodness, what are we going to talk about here? Because you know, we're going to be with each other the next couple of hours, what are we going to talk about? And I'd later on found out that I'd been deliberately stuck next to these people because they had lots of questions about faith. And I was like, oh, right, what are we going to say? Right, so we get talking, and I turn to the guy who, he's actually been in the forces, he's been in the artillery, 4th Light Artillery, but he now distributes paint. and that's what his job is, as a paint salesman. And she runs a tanning salon. And I was kind of conscious of what I'm going to say to you today, but I believe the same thing. There is no such thing as a boring person, okay? You just need to get the truth of things. So I started asking about paint. It was fascinating, I have to tell you. And all about adhesion, and all about robustness, and all the tests that they do, and it's so exciting. We've got this new paint coming out next year, and it's just going to blow the market apart. It's brilliant, it's the best paint you've ever seen in your life for good. And I'm loving all this, because this guy's telling something which is truthful for him, and paint is not boring, let me just tell you that now. Paint is. And because this guy's passionate about this, and he's telling the truth about what he's saying, and we've found a space in the meal where we can talk about this. And then she starts talking about tanning salons and how people spend their money in tanning, and she's in her late 50s, but she began a business a few years ago, and they made lots of mistakes in the first shop that they opened. By the time they opened the second shop, they sorted out all their mistakes, and the place is flooded, and people are coming from all over Colchester to this tanning salon, and brilliant! I'm so chuffed for you, you know? And we're beginning to enter a space where we connect. And then the question comes, and what do you do? I say, I'm a minister. And he starts to tell the story of going to a Catholic school in Dundee where he grew up. And the nuns were vicious. Awful, awful way that they treated them. And I began to think about this thing about crooked generation, about the way that these nuns lived in the rear of the priest. But they were just awful to these kids. He said if you got a mistake wrong, your sons would bang your head against the wall. Or once, he said it was an awful thing. We were caught smoking once, and all our parents were taken and called into the school. And the nun just screamed at our parents for the fact that we'd been caught smoking. And I began to think about this thing about crooked generation, about how religion, and I was saying this to this couple yesterday, how religion sometimes tells you that God is this distant ogre who doesn't like you very much. But if you can just avoid smoking, and if you can get your maths right, and if you can be nice enough to the priest, and you can say rosary enough times, then that God might just like you enough. But of course the problem comes is that everybody has dark secrets. And everybody doesn't quite say the rosary enough. And nobody gets 100% in the math test. And not everybody smokes, but we all have secret corners of our lives that we know that God disapproves of. And we think, God, if you found out about this stuff, you probably don't like me very much. So I better prove to you the extent of my religious zeal, and I'm going to bang this kid's head against the wall, and I'm going to scream at these kids because their parents have been caught smoking, and I'm going to be an absolute horror in this classroom, because if I do that, God, then I'll be zealous for your cause, and I know that you might like me a bit more. And this is crooked generation, and it is not of the Spirit, and it is not of the gospel. And they asked me, well, why do you believe? And I told them stories of mistakes I've made and prayers gone. I didn't tell too many mistakes, I was probably too big headed for that. But I did tell them stories of times I've prayed, and I just said, I am constantly stunned by the way that God loves, and the way that God forgives me, and the way that God uses me in surprising people to come to faith. And I tell you, it was like time went. You know, people were telling us to move and get a move on with our dessert so they can clear the tables. That's never happened to me before. But there was something that happened that they told the truth about themselves, and I told the truth about myself, and we found a language that we could speak. And very soon that conversation came round to faith, and we began to tell the story of God. And I hope, I pray that God's Spirit moves in me as it moves in that couple, because at Pentecost, God's Spirit is poured out on all flesh, on ministers and on nuns and on priests and on paint salesmen and the owners of tanning salons. All flesh are drawn into this conspiracy together. And they're pulled away from versions of religion which are crooked. Okay, on to the story I'm dreading telling you. About 2000 and 7 onwards, as you probably know, the church was riven with controversy, the Church of Scotland, about the affirmation of clergy who are in same-sex relationships, either civil marriage or a civil partnership. And through my time in India, actually, I had a fairly liberal attitude towards that. But I was asked by a presbyter of Glasgow to do a Bible study on this, and because I'm into biblical languages, so they got me to do that. So that was fine. And I had come to the conclusion reluctantly that I could not square same-sex relationships with the scriptures, the portrait in Genesis of God being male and female, and that when male and female come together, that represents God. And Leviticus, gay people know this verse, it's called one of the texts of terror for gay people, where if a man lies with a man, as a man lies with a woman, it's an abomination. And also the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, and also Jesus never spoke about homosexuality, but he did talk about divorce, and he used that as an opportunity to say that it was maleness and femaleness that came together in marriage. And then famously, Romans chapter 1, Paul talks about the kind of sins of the Gentiles and how they are inflamed in idolatrous passion, and the women are overcome with lusts, unnatural lusts, and the men are overcome with lust for each other. And there are also a number of verses in Paul in Corinthians where he uses a word called ars nekoites, which most people would say refers to gay men. Although most people also recognise that it probably has quite a strong element of temple prostitution going on. So anyway, I knew all these verses, and I suppose from about 2007 to 2013, my position had kind of hardened a little bit. And you'll remember there was a minister from Aberdeen called Scott Rennie who asked to be a minister, and that was allowed. And I remember I spoke in that debate against him becoming a minister, and being absolutely devastated when the church had allowed him to become a minister. And then in 2013, we were faced with three ways forward as a church. There's been lots of reports written, we've had lots of dialogue, and there was basically a three-way choice. Choice number one was the kind of progressive choice, which was that everybody, whether they were gay or straight, could be a minister. No questions asked, that's it. Choice number three was the traditional choice, which said you could only be a minister if you were straight, if you were married to your partner, or if you were gay, then you can only be a minister if you were celibate. So that was the kind of traditional choice. And in the middle was a compromise, which was kind of worked out, and the original compromise was kind of tossed around, but eventually a bunch of evangelicals came up with a compromise that said that the traditional teaching of the church would remain, but congregations could, if they wished, opt out and say that they would call a gay minister who was in a relationship. And that compromise proposal was kind of, a bunch of evangelicals kind of broke ranks to put that compromise towards the church, and is seen as a way of everybody being held together. So in the debate, I spoke for the traditional proposal, which kind of surprised people, because I've seen this being a kind of moderate evangelical, but here was I kind of adopting a more hardline stance. And I remember after the debate, one of my friends, Alex, who's gay, she said she was just gutted. Another guy, Stuart, who's gay and lives in Dundee, he didn't speak to me for about 3 years after this. But I said, you know, Jesus welcomed people from all walks of life, but he had the highest ethical standards himself, and we cannot allow this to happen. So anyway, what happened was that the church didn't vote for the thing I voted for, they voted for the compromise proposal, which is why when you were vacant, you were asked if you'd call a gay minister or not, because that's the compromise. So that happened. Anyway, I get on the train that night, and I'm coming back on the train from Edinburgh to Glasgow with a guy who's absolutely revered in the Church of Scotland. His name's John Miller, he's a former moderator. And him and his wife, Mary, have lived in Castlemilk all their years. When he retired from Castlemilk, he went off to Zimbabwe, as you do. But anyway, John's a legend. And him and his wife, Mary, are devastated because the original kind of affirming proposal wasn't adopted. And John saying, you know, we've just come back from Croatia, and in Croatia, gay men are being attacked, and the church at best is turning a blind eye, but at worst is encouraging this kind of behaviour. And there's another guy who's a legend as well called John Harvey, and he's kind of joining in with them. And Mary, who was Scots Woman of the Year a number of years ago, but got forced to be reckoned with, starts piling into me and going, what were you voting for that thing? We heard your speech in General Assembly. I'm going, oh, Mary, I'm just doing what I think the Bible says. And she's hammering into me, and John's much more gentle, trying to restrain his wife. And but after this whole card journey all the way back about what was happening in Croatia, and John was saying, the minute that you send a signal that to be gay is to be defective, that gets picked up by extremists on either side, and it gets turned to violence. So that had happened. That was a Monday. The Tuesday at the General Assembly, I arrived back, and one of the women that works in the cloakroom of the General Assembly is called Pam Skrgatic. So it's got another 10 minutes to run, so that's okay. And Pam Skrgatic was at school, or sorry, it's the mother of a guy I was at school with called Paul Skrgatic, and Paul's gay. And I meet Pam in the cloakroom, and she's lovely. Oh, Neil, how are you doing? How are you doing? And I say, oh, Pam, nice to see you. And I said, oh, how's Paul getting on? Oh, she says, it's lovely. We were at his wedding 2 weeks ago. It was beautiful. He's such a nice guy. I love his partner. Very, very happy for them. And I found myself in my spirit being happy for Pam and pleased for her. And I'm thinking, Neil, how do you square what happened with you speaking on Monday, saying that gay relationships are wrong, effectively, and then on Tuesday you hear about a gay relationship and a guy you know getting married and you're happy for his mum? How do you square that? So on the Wednesday, I'm literally on my knees in prayer to God, and I say, God, what on earth is happening here? Could you please tell me what I should think here? And I swear this is the truth. A word came into my head, which is, Paul Skrgatic is from Croatia. Paul Skrgatic is from Croatia. And that tied together the conversation I had on the Monday night with John Miller and Mary Miller with my conversation with Paul's mum. So I text Paul and I say, Paul, just random question, Paul, could you tell me where are your family from? And the reply comes back, oh, we're from Croatia. Oh my goodness, what are the chances of that? So that sparked for me a whole year of studying the scriptures. And I'm not expecting you all to agree with this, but I want to tell you what my journey was. A year of studying the scriptures and sensing perhaps that what was in Romans 1 wasn't about all gay relationships, but was about what was happening in temples and pagan prostitution. And also seeing that we also had to read the law through the lens of Jesus Christ, who said that if your interpretation of the law encouraged harm to people, and there is an example of this in a Sabbath story, then you had to come to a new interpretation of the law. And also the argument that's often used about gay people, which says that it's a sin, and we're all born with different sins, that doesn't mean you act on it. But constantly encountering the fact that people say it's like alcohol addiction, you know, you shouldn't do that, just if you're attracted to people of the same sex, you shouldn't do that. But constantly observing the fact that parents of gay children, and you are parents of gay children, a number of you are, say that my child's partnership has enhanced their life, it hasn't diminished it. So I thought about all these things, and there was a poet called Padraig O'Toomey, who's a bit of a legend, who helped me read the Bible in a new way. And I was beginning to shift my thinking, and also thinking about this, the story we heard today is the first Pentecost in Acts chapter 2. There's a second Pentecost that happens in Acts chapter 10, where Peter, through a vision, a word from God, is asked to sense that something which he previously called unclean is in fact clean, and that God's Spirit is poured out on more people than he had previously imagined. And that becomes quite an important story. In the February of that year, my local newspaper, the Rutherglen Reformer, phoned me up and said, Neil, what do you think about the new Marriage Scotland Act that has just been passed? Now, regardless of this whole story, I have always believed that gay marriage should be allowed, because I don't think that the church should decide what happens in state. So I phoned up, I said to the newspaper, listen, this is good news, it's about the inclusion of all people in our society, and I welcome this. And the headline that they put above the article, the quote was accurate, but above the article they said, Church of Scotland, local minister goes against Church of Scotland's own teaching on same-sex marriage. And that was in the Rutherglen Reformer, which is owned by the Daily Record, so it went onto the Daily Record website. And still, if you type my name into Google today, that's about the fourth thing that comes up. And I said, all these people on the phone go, Neil, what's this you're saying? We thought you were one of us. But I wasn't really that bothered about that, but I was bothered about my own congregation who had suddenly read this in the newspaper and were going, what is this about and what's happened to Neil? And very, very hard conversations that we had. And one night we all gathered together and we told them the story, and people from different viewpoints told stories. And probably most moving of all was a couple called Ishbel and George Glencourse, who do a flower rota in my former congregation, and a more traditional Church of Scotland couple you could not imagine. And they told the story of their daughter Thora, who's gay, and had been forced to stop being a Sunday school teacher because she was gay, but they enjoyed her relationship. And that was a very, very moving night. And we said as a church, some people will think one thing in this church and some people will think another thing, but what we have to agree is that we're going to stay together through all of this. And that was kind of the journey. And the next year at the General Assembly, I bumped into Pam Skirgatic again in the canteen in the it's called the Rainy Hall. And I said to Pam, I have been telling a story about you for the last year, and I think it's only fair that you hear it. And just as I would start the story, out the corner of in my eye, I catch John Miller, who I'd met in training, and I call him over and say, John, this is Pam. Pam, this is John. The two of you don't know each other, but there's a story that involves the two of you that I've been telling for the past year. And I told them the story that I've just told you now. And both of them were very moved. And Pam told me, actually, Paul's links with Croatia were actually even stronger than what I'd known. And that's kind of a story I had to tell you, because it was a story I believe that the Spirit has spoken to me. And I want to tell you the story behind the newspaper headline, because that's something you'll read. And I need to tell you that story today, partly because I think the time is right, it's hung on me for 18 months, and partly because it's Pentecost, and that is a Pentecost story for me. And I think just a little wee coda was that I left the General Assembly on Friday, two Fridays ago, and I was deeply moved, because that's been my world for 11 years, and I had to go early. So it was a closing worship, and the moderator preached about forgiveness, and I just found it the most beautiful sermon. It really spoke very deeply to my own life. And we sang a song, Speak, O Lord, and in the last verse, I walked out of the assembly hall, knowing that this had been my world for 11 years, and I closed the door and just said, thank you, God, for all that has happened in that place for me in the last 11 years. And I walked down to the story, I went to the cloakroom to get my bag, and who was on but Pam Skirgatic? And Pam said goodbye. And that was just a lovely sense of closure for me. So that's the story. And you might not agree with that interpretation of scripture, in fact, I know some of you won't. And that's okay, because that's fine. And some of you will. But I need to tell you that story, because it is truth talking to truth, and God speaking to us in a language in which all flesh